So I'm so glad that you're here, because I don't take it lightly that you give up a Saturday morning. You know, probably one of our most valuable resources today is time. And people don't want to spend time doing something that they don't think is going to be valuable. And so I totally appreciate that you have committed this morning to come here and learn about the roadmap to healing marriages. And some of you might be here because you're marriage mentors in your church, or you're working with other couples, and you know that marriages today, a lot of them are in trouble, and they're not doing so well. The divorce rate is pretty much the same for Christians as it is for non-Christians. And so you're here because you want to help other couples so that they can restore their marriage. And maybe you're here because your own marriage is in trouble, and you are clueless as to what you can do to fix it. And so I'm going to share with you some really hard and tough truths today about what it takes to put a marriage back together. And the reason I preface it with hard and tough is because most of the time people aren't really honest with you about what it takes to build a healthy relationship as well as put back one that's been damaged. So I want to promise you that by the end of today, you're going to learn what it takes to build a healthy, happy marriage and what it takes to repair one if it's begun or has broken down. Because those are the two ingredients that all of us need to learn. Harvard University did a really interesting study. Maybe you've read about it on the internet. It's called the Harvard Grant Study. It's the longest longitudinal study that's ever been done in studying what makes people happy. And so they interviewed the graduates of Harvard University from 1938 to 40, these graduates, for the last 75 years. Every year, they would talk to these smart people who graduated from Harvard University to ask them, okay, what makes life work? What makes you happy? What is the essence of what really matters in life? And probably your opinion of that changes as you get older. But hands down, these researchers discovered something that God has told us all along. It doesn't matter what your degree is. It doesn't matter how much money you make. It doesn't matter whether you won the Nobel Peace Prize, which many of these Harvard graduates had, or became the CEO, or you were a multimillionaire. Hands down, what mattered was if you were to be able to have a loving relationship and keep it. That's what mattered. Over 75 years of these studies said that what made people happy and healthy over the long run was their ability to have a relationship and their ability to keep a relationship. You see, finding a relationship sometimes is the easy part. And we can find people to love and find people to date and find people to hook up with if that's what we're looking for. But to actually keep a relationship and keep it to be a good relationship isn't so easy. And so what Harvard said is there are two main tasks if you want to build a happy and healthy life. The first one is that we have to be able to know how to find people to love and who will love us. And we also have to know what we do to wreck that, right? Because we all have things that we do that mess up our relationships, right? We shoot ourselves in our own foot because we want this love and we want this connection and we want this closeness, and then we do stupid things that mess it up. And if we don't know how to fix those stupid things that we do that mess up our relationships, and if we don't know how to repair those relationships when they get messed up, then we won't be happy. And so we have to learn, for example, because we all mess up, how to admit our mistakes. That's hard for some people. I'm sorry is really hard for some people to say or to admit. We have to learn how to deal with our emotions, our temptations, in a way that doesn't push love away. And since love and connection are the most important things that you're to learn in your lifespan, you are in the right place this morning. It has a huge payoff for you if you can do this, because the Harvard study found that people who are happily married for a long-term relationship are not only the happiest, but they're the healthiest, and they live the longest. Now, what we're going to be talking about is building a good marriage. And that doesn't happen automatically, because the word building is a verb. And one of the things that Harvard study discovered was if we want this relationship to last, we actually have to learn how to love. Now, we might think that, oh, everybody knows how to love. But the kind of love that we naturally know how to do is called fish love. Has anybody heard of fish love? It was on the internet recently. Okay? So fish love is, I love fish. Now, maybe you think, I hate fish. Maybe you love pizza. I love chocolate. But fish love is, you don't love fish. You love eating the fish, which involves killing them. Right? That's the kind of love we do naturally. It's a selfish love. That's not the kind of love we're talking about. The kind of love that we're talking about that you need to learn is not fish love. We do that very naturally, but by fish love, we actually hurt the one that we say we love because we're eating them. Right? So we don't love the fish. We love what the fish give us. Right? And when the fish don't satisfy us in the way we want anymore, we discard them. Don't love fish anymore. Isn't that happen with people? Happens in relationships. And so we have to learn how to love. And true love, genuine love, lasting love, requires that we learn something very hard for us to do in our human nature. And that means we have to, and Harvard is saying this, not the Bible, but the Bible says this. But Harvard is saying that in order to genuinely love, we have to start moving away from our natural selfishness and narcissism towards genuine love, compassion, and connection. We have to learn how to do that. And then the second thing we have to do is understand what our own personal flaws are and coping mechanisms that push love away. Now, the Bible confirms the importance of loving relationships. God says that there's nothing more important that we're to learn in our entire life than two things. What? We are to love God with all of our heart, mind, soul, and strength, and we're to love others. God says that there's nothing more important than good connection and healthy relationships. In fact, he tells us in Ecclesiastes, if one falls down, his friend can help him up. But pity the man who falls and has no one to help him up. And if two lie down together, they will keep warm. But how can one keep warm alone? God's plan for us, for you, for me, is all about exactly what Harvard discovered after 75 years of research. God knew all along. Jesus tells us that all the commandments can be boiled down to two. And I believe that's what we're going to be evaluated in our life at the end. Did you love God? Not fish love. Did you love God? And did you learn how to love others well? And if not, what got in your way? And so what I want to do right now is teach you or share with you some of the things that might get in your way in order to build love. Because we have to have some basic character qualities in ourselves in order to have and maintain good relationships. Because the first stage in building a good relationship, a good marriage, is maintenance. You see, a lot of people get married and they think that this marriage is going to automatically stay wonderful. I mean, hopefully it's wonderful on the marriage day. Sometimes it goes south on the honeymoon, but most of the time not. But eventually, things start deteriorating in a marriage and it needs maintenance, just like your house. I mean, how many of you have ever built a new house? All right, moved into a new house. And it looks wonderful for about, what, 2 or 3 years? But even that, if you don't maintain your marriage or your house, what does it look like after a while? What would your house look like after a month of not taking out the garbage? If just that one maintenance task you didn't do, what would your house smell like if after a month you didn't remove the garbage. Well, what about when we don't remove the garbage in our marriage? There is garbage that accumulates, you know. There's hurt feelings, stuff that happens between us, and we never talk about it, we never deal with it. But you've got this garbage that's accumulating, you don't maintain. It takes regular work to maintain things. And if you never took out the trash or washed your dishes or made the bed or cut the grass or weeded the garden, how would your house look after a few weeks? Wouldn't look very good, even if you had a beautiful house. Or how would your body look if you never showered? You didn't shave your face or your legs. You never cut your hair, brushed your teeth, trimmed your nails. You wouldn't be all that attractive. Nobody would want to kiss you. If you didn't maintain yourself, you wouldn't be as good looking as you are this morning. How many of you looked in the mirror this morning and said, yep, I need some maintenance, right? Or some repairs, something, right? You see, there's this law of nature that says what we don't maintain will deteriorate. What we don't maintain will deteriorate. No matter how lovely something is, how beautiful something is, if you don't tend to it over time, it will lose its loveliness. Now, I just moved to Arizona, but back home in Pennsylvania, I had a beautiful 3-acre plot of land and lots of flower gardens. I had 3 large perennial gardens. But during my book writing season, when I was writing about a book a year, I didn't spend as much time in my gardens as I had earlier. And one summer, I never even went out the back door to look. I mean, I just was so focused on getting my book deadlines done that I never went out my back door, ever. Like, I'd go through the garage into the car and then out, but the back I never looked at. And like 2 months later, I walked out there and I was totally shocked. I had weeds as tall as me. And all the flowers that were there could not be seen because of the amount of weeds. In just 2 months, a beautiful perennial garden that had previously been very well maintained totally lost its loveliness because of a lack of maintenance. And that's what can happen in our marriages. That when we don't maintain things, when we're lax in taking care of business in our relationships, in 2 months, we can lose that love and feeling. We don't feel connected. We don't feel close. I don't want to kiss you. I don't feel like being with you lately. Because we haven't cleared the trash. We haven't done what needs to be done in every relationship, not just certain ones, every single relationship. I've been doing this a long time. I've been married 43 years for one person. It requires maintenance and work. And so why are we so surprised when we're lazy and we don't maintain something, including our marriage, that it deteriorates? If you don't maintain your body, and you don't wash and brush your teeth, after a few days, you deteriorate. You're not unhealthy, but you're smelly and unattractive, right? And if you don't maintain your house, it gets smelly and unattractive. And if you don't maintain your car, it starts to get smelly and unattractive. What makes us so shocked that our marriage starts getting smelly and unattractive? And we're like, what happened? What happened is maybe we didn't put in the maintenance. And so I want to talk about a couple of qualities that we need to have in order to be able to maintain a relationship with anybody, including our children, but especially if we want to have a loving connection with our spouse. And the first quality is healthy self-awareness. We need to have a healthy self-awareness. You know, just like you can't maintain your body unless you're aware that you need to. Like, how many of you are aware that you need a shower? Like, you sort of can smell your own self, right? You know, nobody's telling you you need a shower. You kind of know you need a shower, or you need to brush your teeth, or you need to do some maintenance with your hair. The mirror helps you, but you sort of know yourself that things are out of sort, and you need to take care of yourself. And if you don't have a healthy self-awareness, if you can't smell yourself, or you don't feel that fur on your teeth that happens in the morning, or you don't notice that you are not dressed well, you aren't going to maintain yourself. Well, we could have a whole weekend together on just what healthy self-awareness is, but let me just tell you what it isn't. It's not incessant navel-gazing where you're constantly worrying about yourself or checking about yourself. But healthy self-awareness is knowing who you are, what you like, what you feel. Like, a lot of people don't know what they feel. When I say, what do you feel? I don't know. Upset. Well, how upset? I don't know. So how can you talk to somebody about how you feel if you don't know how you feel? So healthy self-awareness means that you are aware of how you feel, what you stand for, what you don't stand for, what your values are, what you're willing to live for, what you're willing to die for. Healthy self-awareness also means that you're aware of your strengths. I'm good at that. And also your weaknesses. I'm not so good at that. There's no shame in knowing your weaknesses. It's important in order to know ourselves, to know our weakness. Because if we have healthy self-awareness, if I'm aware that I'm weak at certain things, then I can either get someone else to help me, or I can have some training in doing it better, or I can not do that and have someone do it for me. But if I'm pretending that I'm good at everything, I'm going to mess up some things because I'm not good at everything. But if I don't have awareness of what I'm not good at or what I need to learn, then I'm not going to be able to maintain things that I need to maintain. So if I'm not aware that I'm not good at plumbing, and I just say, oh, I can do that, and I mess up everything, and now it's not maintenance anymore, it's repairs. And those are a whole lot more expensive than the maintenance, right? And so healthy self-awareness is an essential skill that we need. And it's very important for good relationships, because how can someone get to know you if you don't know you? And so oftentimes in relationships, especially for women, but sometimes for men, we just kind of pretend. We're being who we think you want me to be. We're being who I think you want me to be for you to love me. But we're not really being who we are, not because we don't want to, but we don't even know who we are because we haven't taken the time to know who we are. And so this is a really important skill for us to develop if we want to have healthy relationships. And that one of the most dangerous things in a relationship is when you are two different people or three different people. Like, you're someone at home and the person at church, you're very different, and the person at work, you're very different. And the person at home can kind of see these different faces and they think to themselves, who are you really? You say you're a godly person at church, you act like a godly person at church, but at home, you act like the devil. I don't know who you are. You say you believe in certain things, but you don't live them. Who are you? I don't know who you are. I don't trust who you are. And when I don't know who you are, and I don't trust who you are, and I'm married to you, that creates a big problem, doesn't it? Because intimacy and connection break down when I don't know who you are, and I don't know trust who you are. So much like a mirror helps us become more self-aware. How many of you looked in the mirror this morning? And did it help you? Yeah, like when you looked in the mirror and you said, oh my gosh, all my makeup came down over my eyes this morning. I gotta like wipe those off. Or, oh my gosh, something's coming out of my nose. I better fix that because I don't want to go to that conference with that thing coming out of my nose, right? We self-correct when we become aware, which is a good thing. Mirrors are helpful. So let me ask you some self-awareness questions. And write them down. Can you see and name your strengths? Do you know what they are as a person? Do you know what you're good at and what God's put in you that's good? Like, I'm really good at people skills. That's something that God has gifted me with. I'm terrible with technology. I don't know how to turn on my own television. I don't even care. It's not interesting to me. If my husband died and I had to watch TV, I'd figure it out. Somebody would have to give me TV lessons. But I know what I'm good at and I know what I'm not good at. And my husband knows what I'm good at and he knows what I'm not good at. And I know that about him too. Do you know what you're good at? Do you know what you're not good at? Do you know where your weaknesses are? And if you don't know, Because we don't always know what all of our strengths are. And we don't, like, I never knew I was a writer. I never knew that until some people started telling me. I didn't know that. So sometimes people tell you about yourself that you didn't know. I remember one time I was speaking, and I had gone to the bathroom, and I was coming out of the bathroom, and I didn't realize that my skirt was tucked into my pantyhose. And I was really thankful that someone behind me noticed and said to me, "You're not noticing something that you'd want to notice." Right? You don't want to get on that stage with your skirt tucked into your pantyhose. So sometimes people give us some feedback to help us know ourselves better. The mirror gives us feedback. But how about your spouse? When your spouse gives you some feedback about yourself, like, "You're sounding really angry." Or, "Are you telling me the truth? I'm not sure you are." Do you listen? Do you reflect on that? Or do you just ignore it? You see, it's like going in the mirror and seeing something about yourself and totally ignoring it. How can you fix it if you don't look at it? And so you can't do maintenance without some self-awareness. And we can't get self-awareness all by ourselves. Just like physically we can't get self-awareness all by ourselves. We need mirrors. We need lights. We need helpers. Because sometimes it's behind us. And so people and things bring self-awareness to us to help us grow. So when someone tells you something about yourself to help you become more self-aware, do you listen? Or do you just get defensive and angry and shut down and reactive? Here's something really important that you need to know. God has put people in your life, particularly your spouse, to help you see yourself more clearly, both the good things and the not so good things. What if you were driving your car and you heard some clanking and bumping noises? What would you do? Would you pay attention? Or what if the oil light came on? Would you pay attention or would you ignore it? How many of you would pay attention? And how many of you would ignore it? Okay. You are like my daughter, Amanda. So my daughter, Amanda, was 19, college student. We bought her this little beater car. It was still a couple $1,000s, but it was a little beater car that she could go back and forth to college. And the little check oil light went on. But she figured to herself, "Oh, the car's running. I can just ignore this light." And so she's not aware. The car is saying, "We need some help." And she's pretending like it's not really happening because it's still functioning. Right? So it's saying we need maintenance, but it's working. So she's saying to herself, "It doesn't need that much maintenance. I'll just wait till I go home and my dad can put oil in the thing. Because then I won't have to spend my money to do it." Do you have a college student like that? So she's driving it. And then we get this phone call. The car won't go. You see, she ignored the maintenance warning signs. The car was trying to tell her something. And now, when the car wouldn't go, she did try to put oil in it. Too late. Car didn't need oil anymore. What happened? Engine froze. So she could have spent $50 for an oil change. Now she needed to spend $500 for a new engine. Do you see how maintenance could help? And repairs become a whole lot more expensive. So if you don't pay attention, and let me just say this, guys, and I don't mean to pick on you, but usually the women are the ones who are more aware that maintenance isn't happening in the marriage. If we haven't had a date night, we're not ever talking, we don't ever go out, I don't know who you are, talk to me. She's saying, "The oil light's flashing." All right? Just so you know. Just so you know. And if you ignore it because the marriage seems to be drawing fine from my perspective, it might be. Until she says, "Done. I'm done with this. I'm out of here." I can't tell you the number of men who call me after Christmas. Like right after Christmas. "My wife stayed until the end of the holidays and she's gone." "What happened?" "I don't know why she left me. I need an appointment right away." And I said, "Is this the first time you've heard she's on it?" "Well, Not exactly, but I didn't really believe her before that. I didn't really pay attention before that. So understand that when the oil light comes on in your marriage, that you need maintenance, just like you would with your car, you wouldn't ignore it. Don't ignore it. And you need some healthy self-awareness to pay attention. Okay? The next thing that you need. Now, let me just say this poem. I like this. The range of what we think and do is limited by what we fail to notice, like an oil light. And if we fail to notice that we fail to notice, there's little we can do to change until we notice that our failing to notice shapes our thoughts and deeds. You see, so when we're blind to something, we can't even see it. We can't even see that we didn't see it. And that's why God puts other people in our life, to help us see things that we don't see. And that's why God's given you a spouse, to help you see things that you can't see, so that you don't fail to notice that you fail to notice, because someone else might notice. Recently, my husband and I were driving, and he doesn't multitask well. Men don't tend to multitask well. And so he doesn't talk and drive well at the same time. And so we were talking, and he almost went through a red light. And so I said, stop. And he didn't pay attention. And I went, stop! As he was about this far from the red light. And he slams on the brakes. And he didn't notice that he didn't even notice until I noticed. Sometimes in marriage, that's how it is. Like someone notices something about what's going on in the marriage or in the family life, and the other one doesn't. You're like, I'm not noticing that. But your spouse is, please listen. It's important. If you want a good marriage, God has put your spouse in your marriage to help you notice things that you don't notice. Not to harm you, but for your good. The second thing that we need, if you want to maintain a good relationship, is you need the ability to self-control. You know, that's something that we need to learn as a child. Like when you have a 2-year-old who's throwing a temper tantrum, can you control that child? No, you can't control them. They're out of control, right? They're throwing a fit, they're kicking and screaming, and what do? You take them in a timeout and you say, you have to sit here until you can what? Control yourself. That's a basic skill, unfortunately, that we're not learning in this culture. And there are people who are out of control. Road rage, verbal abuse, physical abuse, pornography, all kinds of things that we all know are bad for us. And yet we're out of control. We don't know how to control those things. We don't know how to control our emotions. And when we don't, we wreak havoc in our life and in our relationships. One of the fruit of the Spirit is self-control. And so as a Christian, that is a quality that we are to develop. As a human being, it's something that's essential. God knows that. But how many of us, and I will be the first to admit, in a moment of anger or frustration, you have done something or said something that you know has hurt somebody in your family. Hurt that good relationship. Losing control of yourself can be very damaging to your marriage. You can lose your temper and lose your job. Sometimes you can lose your marriage. The Bible reminds us that with their words, the godless destroy their friends, their spouse, their kids. Reckless words pierce like a sword. And so when someone in your life is behaving poorly, or not doing what you want them to do, or not doing what you think they should do, how do you handle yourself? Can you control yourself when you're upset? When you're angry, can you control the words that come out of your mouth? If not, and you say ugly, reckless things, understand the damage it causes. It breaks apart relationships. It hurts people. And if you want loving connection, you've got to develop that attribute, that quality of self-control. The Bible tells us life and death is in the power of the tongue. And how we talk to one another, our spouses, especially our kids, affects people. I grew up in a home where there was a lot of verbal and physical abuse. And I want to tell you, it impacts kids. It impacts adults. Which, you don't have to be raising your hand here, but if you had a boss where you worked who was constantly picking on you and criticizing you and undermining you and telling you your work was crap and bullying you, how many of you would like look forward to going to work the next day? You wouldn't. You'd want to quit that job. You would want to get away from that person. But what about when that's in your home? You can't sustain a loving relationship when there's a loss of self-control, verbally, sexually, financially. You wreak havoc in a family when you don't know how to harness your emotions or your impulses. And so in order to maintain good relationships, we have to learn that. Third ingredient, empathy. Empathy means when someone you love hurts, you pay attention. You don't say, oh, you're just being a baby, or you're too sensitive, or get over it already, or you're just like your father, or you're just like your mother. You pay attention. You feel for them, even if you don't understand why they feel the way they do. Like, you don't get it, but yet you care that they're hurting, and you show that you care that they're hurting. You see, when we don't care, or we say we care, but we don't show we care, God calls it whitewash, actually. He says it's meaningless. Empty words, they don't mean anything if you don't show that you care. And so compassion for someone is one of the very hallmarks of real love, not fish love. Because when we have fish love, we don't have compassion for the fish. We want to eat them, right? But when we have compassion for someone, that's one of the marks of real love, that we care that someone's hurting. We care that someone we love is hurting, and therefore we give them our time and our energy and our help in whatever way we can. And when we do that, that bonds that cement of love together. And when we don't do that, especially when they're hurting, that creates more hurt. Let me ask you a question that you might not like the answer to. Would you like to be married to you? Would you like to be married to you? How you are? Would you like someone to treat you just like you treat your spouse? That be good for you? That might be a wake-up call of self-awareness for some of you. Like, well, I don't think I would. Then maybe God's calling you to make some changes to have that better relationship that you want. You see, Jesus tells us that we're to treat other people like we would like to be treated. So when you're upset, how would you like to be treated? When you're hurt, how would you like to be treated? When you're angry, how would you like to be treated? When someone else is angry with you, how would you like to be treated? That's how Jesus tells us that we're to treat people. And so empathy, that development of empathy, helps us to put ourselves in someone else's shoes and say, how would I like to be treated if I were them in this situation? So if I made a mistake, how would I like to be treated? Well, I'd like to be treated with compassion and kindness. I don't want to be yelled at and scolded and told that I'm an idiot. I wouldn't want to be that. So then I'm not going to do that to someone else if I'm upset with them, right? Because I would want compassion for my mistake, not a free pass to like say it's no problem. I still wouldn't want to make amends, but I would want to be treated with compassion and kindness and grace and forgiveness. And when we fail at empathy over the long term, oftentimes the marriage doesn't make it. The relationship doesn't get sustained because someone feels like they don't love me. I feel like I'm fish love. I'm only good for you when you want to eat me. But I'm not cared about as a person. All right, next one. Social skills. Now, I grew up in a really dysfunctional family, and so I didn't learn a lot of social skills that I needed. Thankfully, I was hardwired to be more of a people person than a technical person, so I was able to learn them quickly. But some of them do not learn good social skills in our family. And two really important social skills that we must learn in order to have good relationships with anybody is the ability to talk, right? And the ability to resolve conflict. And if we don't learn those two social skills, then we have a hard time connecting. Because if we can't talk, and I'm not just talking about information talk, that's easy talk. Like what we having for dinner. We're having fish. You said you love fish. That's information talk. The kind of talk I'm talking about is where you share your heart and your feelings. I often have couples who come to me and say, she will often say, and sometimes he says, but most often she'll say, we never talk. Now, she doesn't mean we never talk. What she's saying is we never have any conversation that means anything. We talk about the weather. We talk about the kids. We talk about what's for dinner. We talk about picking the kids up from school. We talk about all the necessities, but we don't talk about us. We don't talk about our feelings. We don't talk about our goals. We don't talk about our heart. What in essence they're saying is, I don't know you. I want to know you more. I want to know what's inside. And so that's important in order to connect with people. Just like, I mean, how romantic, guys, would it be for you to make love with your wife with a suit of armor on? Be pretty impossible, right? You can't touch her. You can't find her. She's covered. She's closed. So when you're trying to connect with someone physically, there requires a vulnerability, a nakedness, an openness. But when you're trying to connect with someone emotionally, that requires that too. And when we have our suit of armor on and nobody can penetrate because they can't get in, someone can't get to know you that way. And it hurts a relationship. And so we have to develop those two skills, and really, really important. And maybe you are recognizing right now, I don't have those skills, and it's embarrassing to you. It's maybe shaming or humiliating to you. And I get that. When we don't know something, we feel kind of awkward, and we feel kind of, especially as an adult, I think I should have known that as I was a kid. I've met people who don't know how to read as an adult. They didn't get that in school. They maybe had learning disabilities or other things. And so they're an adult and they feel ashamed that I don't know how to read. And so I try to pretend I do and I cover it up, but I really don't. And it's a disadvantage to you. And there's all kinds of problems that get in your way because you don't know how to read yet. But what we need to do is kind of own it. Like, I'm aware I don't know how to read and maybe I need to learn how to read. I can still learn to read. It's not such a bad thing. Lots of people didn't get that in school and I can learn that. And social skills are something you can learn. There's books about them even. Videos you can watch, YouTubes you can watch to help you develop greater social skills. And that's really important if you want to maintain healthy relationships. We've already talked about this a bit, but the ability to receive feedback from people. Again, we cannot see ourselves all by ourselves. And so if we're not able to receive feedback from people without getting all defensive and all angry and all bristly, we won't be able to connect with people. I don't know if you like sports, but there's a high-performance sports trainer who trains a lot of NFL athletes and a lot of football players and golfers and things. And he's Todd Herman, and he says, high performers are not afraid to look at the replay. High performers are not afraid to look at the replay. Why do they look at the replay? Because they have to see what they've done right. All right? So the replay clarifies everything. Wow, we did great. I threw the ball right here. My swing was perfect here, right? A high performer is willing to look at the replay because they want to see what they did right, and they also have to be able to see what they did wrong. So when your spouse wants to do a replay, like, why did this happen? Let's talk about it. We don't want to talk about this. Why did you say, I don't want to listen. I don't want to hear this. We've got to, when we mess up, when there's been an affair, when there's been some hard things in your marriage, and you need to talk about it, it's because we need to look at the replay. Why did this happen? What went wrong? How are we going to make sure this doesn't happen again? If we're not willing to look at the replay, we can't learn from our mistakes. And if we don't learn from our mistakes, that's the biggest mistake of all, because we're going to repeat our mistakes if we don't learn from them. So I don't know if you remember the Super Bowl. I only watch one football game a year, but that's it. And I really like it, and I don't understand a whole lot about football, but what I did understand when I watched the Super Bowl this year was that Atlanta did really well the first half, and the New England Patriots didn't. And then something happened at halftime where the New England Patriots did really well the second half, and Atlanta sort of fell apart. Remember that? I bet they watched the replay. I bet they studied it. I bet the coach and those players went over it and over it and over it and over it. Why? Because high performers are not afraid to look at the replay. And so if you want a healthy life and healthy marriage and you want to be a strong person, if you want to be a high performer in life, you've got to be willing to look at the replay. When your boss gives you feedback and says, hey, you did a great job here, but here you need some work, or your evaluation, you've got a couple of fours instead of all fives, or you caught a couple twos. That's the replay. It's saying, here's some feedback. I'm not telling you this to shame you. I'm telling you this to help your performance improve. I bet Atlanta didn't feel so good when they looked at the second half. I'm sure that they saw some things in their performance that weren't so hot. But if they didn't look at it and become aware of it, then they wouldn't be able to fix it, right? Are you tracking with me how important this is? You see, the conclusion of Harvard was two things. We have to know how to love, and we also have to know how to correct ourselves when what we do is causing our love to fall apart. Just like a football player wants to win, and if they're not winning, they have to look at themselves. When they were winning in the first half and they weren't winning in the second half, they left to look at themselves to see what they were doing that caused their teamwork to fall apart. And if they're not willing to look at themselves, if they're not willing to look at the replay, they can't fix it. And I see so many people who are so afraid to look at the replay. And so if I could give you a piece of advice, God has designed marriage for you to have someone who will help you look at the replay and help you process the replay. And that is so crucial to your growth. You can't grow as a person, as an athlete, as a worker, as a writer. When I write, I get a lot of red ink on my page because my editor is saying, you could fix this. This could sound better. You could correct. This is feedback. She's not trying to shame me. She's trying to help me become a better writer. When your spouse, when your wife tells you your zipper's down, what do? Do you listen to her? I hope you do. She's not out to shame you. She doesn't want you to go out and shame yourself. She's saying, hey, I see something that you don't see. Self-correct, right? Or you tell her, hey, you've got broccoli in your teeth. He's not saying that to shame you. He's saying that because I know you don't want to have a big smile of broccoli in your teeth, right? So when we give each other feedback in these ways, we sort of take it. It kind of stings a little bit, especially if our spouse says, you have bad breath, here's some mouthwash, right? I mean, it doesn't feel real good, but I'd rather my spouse tell me than someone step away from me in the middle of a speaking engagement, right? And so when our spouse gives us that feedback that we're needing some maintenance and we need to look at ourselves and self-correct, I bet if you listened, especially when they tell you some other things like, you sound really harsh right now, or you're scaring me right now, or I don't like your tone. We don't take that very well. We get very defensive. We usually get more escalating instead of saying, thank you, so that I can self-correct. You see, God's designed marriage is more than just a legal contract. It's a sacred covenant, which means you've made promises to love, cherish, provide, protect not only your marriage, but a person, your spouse. And God has designed marriage, as Gary Thomas says, my good friend, not only to make you happy, but to make you holy. But I would say to mature you and help you to learn about what you're doing wrong that pushes love away. If God knows that love and connection are the most important things for your mental, emotional, and spiritual, and physical well-being, and by nature we're sinful, and so we're going to naturally do things that push love away, then he's given you a partner and a helpmate to help you not do that, if you only listen. And so feedback is really, really important. Now, because many of us grew up in unhealthy homes, I just want to take a minute to talk about what a healthy marriage looks like. Okay? Because a healthy marriage is a loving partnership. You have two adults in this relationship. You don't have a parent-child, so we don't have someone trying to control another person or take charge of another person's life. You don't have a parent-child relationship. You have a healthy partnership. Not a slave master dictatorship. Conflict, which is going to happen in every marriage because you have two different people. Conflict involves solving a problem. What's the conflict? It's not about attacking each other. And when you have damages in your relationship, which you will, why? Because you're not perfect. You have two sinners in a relationship, you're going to have some damages. When damages happen in a healthy marriage, they're repaired through confession, through restitution, and change. There's three essential ingredients important for all healthy relationships. They are reciprocity, mutuality, reciprocity, and freedom. So let me just talk about them real quickly. If you want a healthy relationship with anybody, but especially in marriage, both people have to come to the table and bring an offering. All right? Both people have to bring an offering of mutual care, mutual honesty, mutual respect, mutual responsibility for the care and maintenance of the relationship, and mutual repentance when things go south. If only one person in the relationship is caring, or only one person is honest, or only one person is giving, or only one person is repentant, or only one person is respectful, what kind of relationship is that? It's not a good relationship. So if you want a good relationship with someone, both people have to bring this ingredient to the table. Or, if not, you're not going to get that love and feeling. Right? You can't have a love and feeling with a relationship where one person's a giver and one person's a taker. That's called ministry sometimes. Okay? But it's hard to be in ministry to your spouse totally. Right? Because you want a mutual relationship, a partnership. The second ingredient is reciprocity, where power and responsibility are shared. Not where one person gets all the power and the other person has all the responsibility, or one person makes the rules for the other person to live by. And let me just give you a couple of examples where this happens in marriage. Sometimes there's an imbalance because there's not a partnership. There's kind of a parent-child relationship. This can happen financially. Let's say that the husband works and the wife stays home and she works, but she's working in a different way. She's not earning money. She's working and taking care of the family. But there's a lack of reciprocity in the way that finances are handled, where one person has all the power because I make all the money, so I get to make all the decisions, and you have no voice or no choice in how we spend money. I get to spend money the way I want to, and I'll give you a little that you can spend the way I tell you to. Right? That's not a reciprocal relationship. That's not a partnership. And therefore, it won't be a healthy marriage. Or I get to make the rules for you to live by, so you can go here and you can go there and you can go there, but I can go wherever I want to without having to be accountable to you. You have to be accountable to me for the way you talk to me, but I don't have to be accountable to you the way I talk to you. That's not a reciprocal relationship. It's not a healthy relationship. Right? And so we want a relationship in marriage, especially, where power and responsibility are shared. And there's a reciprocation of the relationship. A couple of verses that the Bible talks about this with respect to relationships is one in 1 Corinthians 7, where Paul talks about the marriage relationship and how wives should not deprive their husbands of sex. We all know that passage, right? Because sometimes we use it to get what we want. But the real interesting part of that passage that Paul was trying to emphasize, especially to men, because when you think about that culture that Paul was writing in, it was a very patriarchal culture that men had power over women, and women were seen more as property than people. That was the culture. And so when Paul was talking about that in 1 Corinthians 7, when he was writing about Christian marriages, the most important word in that passage was not, wives, you're not allowed to say no, was the passage says, and likewise, husbands. You see, Paul was taking this imbalance of power over husbands, over wives, I get to own you, and he was saying, wait a minute, this is how the Christian marriage works. Sort of, you own her, she owns you. It's mutual. It's mutual. You don't have power over someone. It's a mutual relationship. Another passage where he talks about giving. We talk about sacrificial giving, and that's an important virtue in the Christian life. And yet when one person is always doing the sacrificing and the other person is always doing the taking in a marriage, we have this imbalance, and it's not good for the marriage, and it's not even good for the people. And so here's where Paul talks about a church giving sacrificially to another church, and here's what he says. I do not mean that others should be eased and you burdened, but that as a matter of fairness, your abundance at the present time should supply their need, so that their abundance may supply your need, that there may be fairness, mutuality, and reciprocity, even in the relationships in the churches. Paul is talking about this important principle. And the last ingredient for a healthy relationship is freedom. Freedom. God gives us a right, and that is the freedom to choose. He gave Adam and Eve the right to eat of all the fruit in the garden except one. He limited their freedoms, but he gave them the freedom. But he also gave them the freedom to say no to him. Right? Adam and Eve said, no, we're not going to listen. We're going to do what we want. All healthy relationships need the freedom to say no, because you can't say yes if you can't say no. And so when we are in a marriage with somebody, especially some misunderstandings of headship and submission, sometimes give a woman the feeling like, I can't say no. I'm not allowed to disagree. I'm not allowed to have my own voice, or I'm perceived as unsubmissive and ungodly. And that's not true. Headship doesn't mean that you get your way all the time. That's not called biblical headship. It's called selfishness. And submission doesn't mean you say yes all the time. And so in a healthy marriage, we need the freedom to respectfully disagree, to challenge, to ask questions, and also to be different. Like, I remember talking to a man on the phone this week, and he said, my wife was trying to tell me she didn't like something, but I just never listened to her because I thought she was just like me. And she's not just like you. She's like her. God made her different. She doesn't like fish. She likes pizza. And he kept thinking she was just like me. And she wasn't. And that's a big mistake that a lot of human beings, you know, have. It's like everybody's just like me. They're not. They're different. And so they're going to have different opinions and different ideas and different desires and different goals and different tastes. And those aren't sinful or bad or ungodly. They're just different. And if you don't have the freedom to be different and talk about who you are, especially in the most intimate relationship, is a marriage, it's not healthy. It's not healthy. So let's quickly, and then we'll take a break, look at some of the warning signs that your marriage has not been maintained very well, and then we're going to go into the second session about how to repair. Okay? So here are some warning signs that your marriage has not been maintained. First, consistently ignoring the clearly identified needs of your partner. I need to spend time with you. I need you to tell me that you love me. I need you to show me you care. I need you to help me around the house. Whatever the clearly identified needs of your partner are, when we regularly ignore them, we are neglecting maintenance. Now, of course, no one can meet everybody's needs all of the time. And if we expect that, we're going to kill our marriage. But when we refuse to meet our spouse's legitimate needs regularly, just like if you refuse to meet your house's needs or your car's needs regularly, you don't put gas in it, you don't put oil in it, you don't take out your garbage, your relationship is going to deteriorate. Second, not just failing to meet their needs, but when you dismiss, devalue, or demean your spouse, their opinions, their feelings, their feedback, their goals, it kills a relationship. I was talking to the counselors yesterday, and I was telling about a situation where a man was opening up in my counseling office, and he was sharing some of his goals, and he was sharing some of his feelings about them and some hurts that he had. It had nothing really to do about his wife, but he was just opening up. He was sharing himself. For one of the first times in the counseling, he was kind of being authentic. He wasn't just giving information. He was sharing about him, what he wanted and what he desired and what bothered him. And you know what his wife did right in the middle of his sharing? She went like this. Aw. I like, what? What? I said to her, can I give you some feedback? And she said, okay. I said, good, because you're paying me a lot of money to be here. What you just did right now was demeaning and shaming, bordering on emotionally abusive. You're here to work on your marriage, and this is how you respond when he opens up. Do you think he's going to open up again? Do you think he's going to share his feelings when you humiliated him like this? And she received that, and she realized, you know, it was hard for her to see her husband vulnerable. And she had to work on that. But you see, if we can't be vulnerable with one another, and we can't open up, or when we do, we're dismissed and demeaned and devalued, we're not going to open up again. I remember one woman who said on her honeymoon, her husband commented on the cellulite in her thighs. That was it. She didn't feel like being undressed in front of him again. When we devalue and dismiss and demean people, we shut down. You destroy intimacy. You need some more than maintenance when that happens. You're going to need some repairs. But it really hurts a relationship. Because why would someone want to be in a relationship with you when you treat them that way? Third, when any other relationship is placed in a higher priority than the marriage relationship, other than God, when any other relationship is placed as a higher priority than the marriage relationship. Now, I understand sometimes there are seasons that other things get a priority, like children. Young children especially have urgent needs. A crying infant cannot wait while you have a conversation. Right? And sometimes there's times in your life where there's elderly parents or other crises that you need to attend to, and the marriage might get put on the back burner. I know every time I write a book, a book takes me a year to write, and it's very intense. And I talk to my husband about that, and I say, you know, if I write this book, you understand that our marriage is going to suffer because weekends are spent writing and not playing and doing fun things that we normally do. So if I'm going to write this book, are you okay with that? Because that's a sacrifice for him, too. Not that our marriage is bad. It's a good marriage, but we don't have the quality time as much as we would if I weren't writing a book. And so we need to understand that there's times that we might put other things ahead if our spouse is okay with that, and we talk about that. But if we regularly put other things in front of our spouse, like our friends, like our parents, like our children, like our iPhone, like our Facebook friends, and we spend more time investing in that than we do in connecting with our spouse, your marriage is in trouble. Just like if you spent more time in your yard doing your garden than you did in your house, and you let your house go, your house would be in trouble, right? If you're not investing and maintaining your relationship, it's going to deteriorate. So that lack of investment in relationship time, energy, and money is really, really important. And you know, sometimes like you're here, you're investing in your time and energy and money and being here, and that's great. But if I only cleaned my house once a year, how would that go? So it would still deteriorate because once a year maintenance is not enough. Once a year maintenance might be fine for some things like changing your filters on your vents or whatever they are in your house. But most relationships require regular maintenance. Just like you can't put gas in your car once a year. You can't put oil in your oil, whatever it's called, once a year. I'm running out of words for these mechanical things. Lack of investment in the relationship. Just two more. Lack of mutuality, reciprocity, or freedom in the relationship. And negative feelings. You see, this is what I want you to think of. Do you know that song, Good Vibrations? Like Beach Boys. I went to the Beach Boys concerts a couple times. Really good song. But let's picture two circles, husband and wife. Okay? And you have good vibes between you. Everything's good. And you know when that changes, right? Do you feel it? Do you feel when those vibrations change in between the two of you and they're like, you know, he's crabby, I don't want to be around him, or she's mad, she's going through that time. Whatever it is, that something changes between you. You know it, right? If you don't repair that or talk about that or get through that in a healthy way, those get bigger and bigger and they turn to walls. Right? And so when you store up these negative feelings, just like if you don't take out your garbage in the house, it accumulates and wrecks your house, if you don't take care of those scratchy, negative vibes that you have with your spouse from time to time, maybe even once a day or a couple times a week, if you don't take care of that, hey, you okay? Are we okay? Oh, yeah, I'm just crap. Then you've kind of cleared the air. And you've kind of taken out the garbage. And it's good. We're good again. Yeah, we're good. If you're not checking with that, with your spouse, are we good? And you let those negative feelings accumulate, it creates a lot of damage.